thoughts. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up later on in today's program, we've got obviously made up news. We have Jim Roop, CNN radio correspondent, going to join us here. What else? I should probably get to this long pile of crap as you've been sort of building up through the. Well, let me do some of these calls. We've got a couple calls here. They'll welcome a good friend, Tim, not Riley, to the Rick Emerson Show to talk, because we had this discussion yesterday about who creates elevator music. Well, I'll tell the story here quickly again in a second, then we'll let me get these calls first. Ken, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello there.
Hey, Rick, how you doing today?
What's up, brother? All right, we're doing a Mark Foley limerick today. Have you a limerick to share with us?
Yes, I do.
All right, bring it on, brother.
All right. There once was a senator so lewd that he wished to see young boys in the nude. He blamed it on beer and a priest that was queer, thus causing the Senate to feud.
Okay, no, that's good. That's good. You know, the great thing, here's the good thing about that limerick, is that it blends in many, you worked in many legitimate news aspects of the story. Because, of course, this radio station, Dan, does operate in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. And we do try to provide news, both opinion and hard fact, for the public. And your news, your limerick here combines many, many legitimate angles and aspects of the story, sir. And I salute you.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, there you go, Ken. Thank you. All right, there you go. And one more. Eric, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. How are you?
What's up, brother?
Oh, I was wondering if that bakery guy got in trouble for loafing on the job. Hello?
I'm sorry. That is totally me. There you go.
Well, being in the hospital is going to slice into his free time. But it's a wonder he didn't get hurt worse than he did.
I can go all day.
Okay, else.
No more? I got it all queued up now, brother. Is it nothing else?
Well, I got nothing. Something about need, but you did that one already.
Something about what?
Something about need.
Okay. Okay, I was going to say there's nothing about, they didn't know if they were going to find him bred or alive. Doing your work for you now. All right, that's how you got to bring it here. All right, there you go. That's Eric. Thank you. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, in fact, I should just welcome him with the, hold on. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. What I'm talking about.
Is this some of his work?
This Rick, I'm a big fan of his work. That's what I said to Ron Jeremy, actually. I said, well, it wasn't me. I mean, I sort of followed up my friend. We were in Vegas. Same trip to Vegas where we saw Pete Rose hanging out at a casino. And you talk about
was
a
this
guy.
Was before
that,
or after we had him on the show?
This is before.
Okay.
This is before when I still lived in Salt Lake. It was the weirdest trip. We go to Vegas and we're riding, there's a conveyor belt thing or whatever that takes you to the airport, and we're walking right into, God, Harrah's or whatever the hell we were staying, and there's like Pete Rose walking right towards a poker table, and it's like, I mean, that's not a sports book, but you feel like that's the guy who's probably going to try his best not to be seen in a casino. But then we're walking around the Excalibur later for some godforsaken reason, and we saw Ron Jeremy, of course, just flanked by two hot chicks. Just like a drink, like Sarah Dillon style, like a drink in each hand. Walking along, drink in each hand, girl on each arm. And my friend Kurt screams, Ron Jeremy! And he looks over and he's like, hey. My friend Kurt just goes, I'm a fan of all of your work. And then Ron just kind of goes, yeah. He sort of like drunkenly lifts the glass and he rolls on. Yesterday on this program, I was having this conversation about, because this is the thing that fascinates me, is behind the scenes of stuff you don't really think about, or sort of that you don't really consider the behind-the-curtain aspect of some things. And the example I brought up was, when you go and you buy that picture frame, who are those people in the frame? And then that got me on to it, like, who is the guy that sits down and writes the music for elevators? Like, when you're riding in an elevator and there's a Muzak there, who is the guy that does that? And I brought up who's the college-trained illustrator that still has to draw Jughead comics. That then led us to porn films.
Porn music.
And so let's welcome now. Should we introduce you by your name or your porn name, sir?
Both. I don't care. I have an alter ego. I'm like the boy, Buster Poindexter and David Johansen.
Our good friend, yeah. Tim Ryan, you are also the man. You hooked us up with Dick Dale,
yeah.
Surf guitar legend a while back.
Absolutely.
So here's what happens. By sheer coincidence, I have to turn this off. Thank you. By sheer coincidence, I was talking to somebody else in this building who shall remain nameless, because we don't wish to give too many identifying characteristics here. But I was talking to somebody else, and he was like, oh, I heard the show today, funny stuff. And I was like, yeah, well, I said, did you hear the whole thing about Muzak? Because it's a fascination of mine. And I said, you know, we're talking about guys who write elevator music. And he's like, you got to talk to Tim Ryan. And I said, why? And he goes, he writes porn music. And so then I walk over here where you're sort of typing away in the computer.
Yeah.
And I said, this is exactly how the conversation unfolded. I said, so I was talking to so-and-so today, and, you know, I've always wondered about guys who write elevator music. I write porn music! And it was like you couldn't wait to tell me about it, because I get the feeling that it's one of those things that you know is cool, but there's just so few people that you can really, like, you can't just strike up a conversation with Starbucks, some girl, but you write porn music.
Right. Well, you know, I think of it as me giving back to something that gave me so much during my pubescent years.
God bless you, sir. So how does... All right, so you live, you're a Portland guy, you live here in Portland.
No.
How does one start writing music for porn films?
All right, well, I'll give you the breakdown. Here's what's up. My friend Zeus Headstrong works over at Brooklyn Brothers.
Zeus Headstrong.
BrooklynBros.net, that's the website. And they do porn production in Portland. They do local
Now, I didn't
porn.
Think they made full-on porn here. I mean, we talk about is strip clubs and adult stores and whatever, but they make, like... That is a dumb question. Is that legal?
Yeah. Totally.
I'm not trying to get anybody in trouble.
Oh,
I'm just
absolutely.
Curious. Because I always wonder... Here's a question I wonder. Maybe you can answer this
or
you can't. I wonder... If prostitution's not legal, how is porn legal?
Because it's a legal business.
Well, I understand that. I'm just... I mean, I know you're not...
Because
it's
test... Because here's what's up. When the porn stars show up to the set, they got to be tested, and they have to sign a document. They have to have documentation that they're 18 and be tested for all that stuff.
But you're still... I know, it's just weird. I always wonder if there's a cop out there or somebody... If there's somebody who knows that, that's the thing I always wonder. Because if you were going to be a hooker... It seems like if you were going to be a hooker and you wanted it to be legal, you just film everything and claim that you're making porn films or whatever. And that would be a way that you could then be a hooker and not get busted for it. That's stuff I think about. So, all right, so you've got friends that do, they run a porn site, but they film the stuff in Portland.
Right, well, they do more than a site. They actually film it and they release the video.
Okay, but,
right.
But they make it all here.
Right, and here's what's up. There's this new film that's coming out that's being filmed. It's called A Call to Booty. All right, and it's Marine who is going out and getting as much as he can before he goes off to war, and it's going to be released Playboy like in January.
It's a documentary, okay.
Right, and they needed music for this film, and so I stepped forward with my informal music training. All
but
the
that
years,
is you, so you knew these guys. Did they just call you and go like, "Would you like to do porn music"?
No, I just kind of approached them and said, "Look, you know, I'm looking to create the pet sounds of porn." And therefore, can I create it?
So are you like a one-man band? Do you do it all yourself, or you have like a band that plays with you?
Well, no, it's me, my alter ego, Vinny Capicelli, and then Jack Slam and Scott Bedford.
Jack Slam sounds like some sort of... Well, anyway, so do you... I mean, people think that porn music is just... That it has one sound, that it all kind of sounds the same, but do you watch the film, and then as you're watching it, like this... This scene makes me think of a particular... Actually, let's just not use that phrase. That's really just about me being a prude. We'll just say that song we came in with.
The song that you came in with, the Waka Waka Wow 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 Wow. Does that work?
There we go. This.
There you go.
So, do you do it like John Williams scoring Close Encounter style, where you watch the movie and you make notes to yourself, or do you just like you watch the movie and you just bust it out? Are you doing it in advance?
No. Pretty much, I just sit down with a six pack of beer and I just start writing stuff out, whether it be a guitar and bass thing, or maybe throw some sax lines in there or whatever. Yeah.
I mean it. It seems to be a lot of standard elements in porn films. Like, there's always the wah-wah guitar.
Right, but there's another song on there you can play, too.
Is that this one right here? This one is called Pounded?
Yeah, it's the instrumental version of Pounded.
Is there a vocal instrument version
of Pounded? Yeah, you don't want to play it on there.
And does that... I won't play it, but, I mean, does the vocal version of Pounded contain lyrics, or is it just sounds?
Grunting.
No. See, that's the thing. What we do is we create some music for strippers and then some of the music for porno, and some of it's kind of intertwining. All you got to do is take out the words, and it sounds all right still. Excellent. By the way, can I promote the website?
Yeah, we'll do it here in just a second.
All right. This is the sound of passion.
Is that your artistic observation?
Absolutely.
Is that your color commentary?
Mm-hmm. This is the wall of sound of porn.
And so, here's a weird question. Hmm. So, have you ever been... I mean, are you a porn connoisseur? Are you a consumer of porn? No shame in that, my friend.
No, I mean, not totally.
You can admit it here.
When I was a kid, it was kind of the typical story where me and my buddy discovered on my dad's porno video in his closet.
That's what happened. It can't be stopped. The porn music needs to be, it's demanding to be heard. Because I was going to ask if it's like, if you've ever watched, have you ever rented a porn film and then it's your own music's in it?
No, I wish. No. No, when I was a kid, that's what I paid attention to. Like, the porno was on, but it was so bad, I was paying attention to the music.
See, that's one of those things where I always thought I was the only one. Because really? I have this, no, seriously, I have this, it's like meeting another plushie. I have this very clear memory. And these conversations are always a little weird because they always sound like really, like, latently homoerotic. In a way that I don't really intend. And I think, anyway... But I remember I was at this when I was in high school. I had this friend of mine who shall remain nameless, and I would totally be over hanging out of this house. And it was just, it's like sometimes if you're dusting, you put on a little light music in the background while you're doing the dishes.
Right.
I would just be hanging out of his house, and we're doing whatever. We're like, we're on the computer, we're doing homework, whatever. And he would just put on a porn film in the background.
Yeah.
And so it would just sort of be on while we were there, just to sort of, you know. Just to sort of idly amuse you at slack moments. And I remember looking up, and I don't remember what the porn film was. I remember it starred this huge, like really rotund, morbidly obese, bald man. He looked like Grossberger from Stir Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it had this music bed that sounded a lot like the Scorpions' Rock You Like a Hurricane.
Yeah.
And I very clearly remember thinking, there's someone in a studio who had to sit down and watch this and then write the appropriate music. So what everybody wants to know is, do you get to go to the set and watch the movies being done?
I have seen a porno movie or two being filmed.
Now, is it completely... I've heard that it's completely not sexy at all, that it's totally not a turn-on to watch a porn film, like a real one being made.
Yeah, it's more or less like a construction site. People doing a lot of work, going back and forth, a lot of running around, a lot of stop and go.
Is it true that... Let me ask you this. Is it true that... How should we put this? In a piece of adult cinema, that a scene, let's say, an encounter.
Yeah.
Is it true that when you watch an adult film and what seems to be one encounter, that is actually something that is filmed in a whole bunch of different pieces over the course of like 90 minutes?
Yeah, pretty much if you watch something...
And is that because the guy guys being guys, you got to... In 90 minutes to get everything you need?
Right. I mean, basically, if you watch a 15-minute piece, that's going to probably take at least an hour, if not more, sometimes to film.
And is that because every time they change the configuration, they must reset all everything?
Well, what you got to do is you got to go around, I guess, and have different angles and try different things out, or sometimes something gets in the frame, whatever.
This this music you make, is this like for a hotel porn, or is this for like real, like full on, like you're rented at Fantasy?
Well, what this is going to be, the music that this is going to be for is, like I said, it's Tour of Booty, and that's going to be a Playboy release, actually. So really? That's going to be seen in many hotels.
So do you make good money for that? I mean, Playboy, that's a big net. That's the biggest of names. It's a gold standard.
You know what? You're a musician. You make money any way you can make money.
Oh, yeah, tell us how much, but I mean, is that like, now is that, do you get money every time some guy watches this in his hotel room?
Yeah, there's a tracking system.
Really?
So pretty much every time...
So you get residuals for this, like a royalty every time somebody...
that's the way it works, right.
That's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Muzak. I mean, there's studio musicians that get paid union wages to create the elevators.
That's fantastic. All right. So, cool. Well, thanks for coming on the
show.
So what is the... go ahead and give the website.
Okay, everybody is on MySpace. It's myspace.com/theWCS. MySpace.com/theWCS. We're the Wicked Corruptors, so that's...
Of course you are. And what is your porn name, sir?
Vinny Capicelli. Because I look Italian, everyone tells me. What do you think, Rick?
No, it's great. Excellent.
Good porn name.
There you go. Well, thank you. I appreciate it, man. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks.
All right,
Vinny
Capicelli, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. All right, there you go. All right, it's 503-733-2970. I believe it or not, and I know right now it is somewhere out there, probably most of the women in the audience are wondering why I could possibly spend so much of my life caring about this. But believe it or not, that's like a thing that I can check off my mental list. That's like a thing I no longer have to worry about. Excellent. Well done, Rick. Thank you. 503-733-2970. Rick Emerson is very pleased with that last segment. Back after this. Don't go anywhere. The Rick Emerson Show returns next. Din, 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 din. 503-733-2970. Rick, was he rolling in the dough, which he didn't really need? No, you know, we've made both of those. Those puns have already been made, sir. We've got these Mark Foley limericks. Now, I'm going to try to get the... We've people been calling with him. I'm going to try to get to some of these. I was going to wait till next hour to do all these via email, but I got to start doing a couple of them. Let's see. There once was a boy named Foley who was touched by a hand of the holy. At a much later age, typed dirty to a page. His one-handed typing went slowly. That's okay. That's not bad. A little bit of meter strains itself a little bit there. I give it a good E for effort. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, the real reason you're here, Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
What to do with a giant 54-foot-long humpback whale carcass that is washed ashore at Long Beach? The event has caught the attention of many locals and experts from the Seaside Aquarium. They say it likely died far out to sea because humpbacks don't migrate along the coast like gray whales. This one is huge. There's a lot of bloating going on here.
Because can I just tell you that I wasn't really listening to most of the story? All I heard was...
Dead whale.
This
big one.
Okay, this one is huge. Mm. And then there's a lot of bloating going on here. Mm. Is this going to be like... Let's just say it. Is this going to be like another thing where they blow up the goddamn whale and then it destroys everything?
All right. These things weigh as much as 80,000 pounds.
Is it laying on the beach?
Yes.
Where?
Dead. Long Beach.
Long Beach. Okay.
Washington.
All right.
Dead whale.
Where's...
Have you seen the picture of it?
You've suddenly become a David Mamet play. Long Beach, Washington, dead whale. What you gonna do? You gonna go blow up the whale? What?
Have you seen a picture of it?
Of the dead, this dead whale? Or
yeah.
It, no.
No, I was watching the news last night. It is huge.
And what kind of a whale?
Humpback whale.
That's not the biggest. I think the sperm whale are the biggest, but a humpback whale is massive.
Yes.
You've seen the thing where they blow up the whale, right? Sarah?
Yeah.
The video? Yeah. Operation Whale Kaboom. Yeah, that really is the gold standard of whale stories.
What other way is
that?
I mean, that's so gross, but you can either blow it up or cut it up.
But I don't think you can even cut it. I mean, do you say how big it is? I mean, it says how many pounds it weighs. But say how
long.
It can
weigh up to 80,000 pounds.
But I mean, how...
I saw someone standing next to it. Yeah, it was probably up to about...
It's a giant whale.
I mean, that's...
Like a foot shy of the ceiling, I'd say. It was huge.
I guess you cut it up and haul it away, but it seems like even that's going to take a long time. I mean, it's like in a whale, I mean, cutting the whale up, it's not like cutting up a 2x4. It doesn't just come off in easily partitioned pieces.
Are we going to push it back into the ocean?
Yeah, but if you push it back, the ocean's
just
going to
come back.
Yeah, the ocean didn't want it, baby. That's why it's there. The ocean spits that stuff out. Anything you see washed up on the beach, the ocean is done with. The ocean has had its fun and is moving on. Yeah, but the problem with the whale is... As I understand, I'm not a whale expert by any means. But again, if you're cutting, whatever, a log, you cut a piece of the log, and there you go. You got two pieces of log. Cut it again, four pieces of log. A whale, you try to cut that, and it's like unzipping a bag full of goo. And then suddenly you can't, then it's just a bucket brigade, and then the seagulls come in, and then there's a lot of pecking and so forth. This is like the new Carissa. Here's a question I don't know, and I live here in Oregon. Did they ever get rid of the new Carissa, or is it still sitting there?
Still sitting there.
Still? Is
they ought to turn into a restaurant.
That's a great idea.
You bet. I come up with nothing but great ideas, but nobody follows through on them.
Turn the dead whale into a restaurant?
No.
No, you call it. Oh, come on, it's genius. I wasn't thinking that, but now I am. You dine inside the dead whale?
Well, we can start a chain of restaurants.
It's really not bad.
Sea Rex and dead whales.
The restaurant is...
It isn't that... I don't know how big whales are in your mind.
I guess nobody's listening to the news stories today.
The restaurant is called... Is... Things? Come on. It's so obvious.
Are we supposed to guess?
Yes.
Dead humpback
Lover?
Whale.
No. The stink pit. No. No.
We're not plankton.
If you're... I am not krill. Baleen's. No. Okay, Baleen's is funnier than my actual... No, I was going to say the restaurant would be called Jonas. But, you know, Baleen's is funnier anyway. Baleen.
Such a class.
Okay. And there you go. Well, I don't know how you get rid of... I really don't know how you get rid of a huge whale. It sounds like I'm leading him to a punchline there, but I really don't. All right. And the new Carissa is still there. No, he was in the new Carissa. Do you know, were you here for the new Carissa?
No, I have no idea what that is.
The new Carissa is a big oil tanker, right?
Some sort of tanker.
It's a huge, but I think it was an oil tanker because I think, or maybe it just had some oil in it. But it was a huge tanker ship that crashed in Coos Bay. I forget exactly how it even happened now, but it washed
up. There were negligence.
Yeah, the mistakes were made.
The captain was drunk.
That's always the case. Boat You know, what? And it's always like some headline like, smashed, you know, as the boat hits the thing. No, the boat, and of course you think of a boat as being flat-bottomed, but of course they're not. The boats go down to a, like the Titanic, they all go down to a peak down below. They're sort of like a, you know, it's like a pyramid, sort of. It's a wedge. And so the boat somehow got too close, ground in ashore, but of course, you know, the whatever it is, the bottom, is it the bow? What's the thing underneath? The keel of the boat is buried in the muck. Anyway, so there's a huge tanker that's jammed into the beach at Coos Bay.
Is it still there?
It's still there.
A tow truck came.
And it was there. The first time it was there was what, like 5 years ago?
At least.
And it's just been sitting there. It's a boat that just ran, and it not, I'm not talking like a little boat, it's a huge goddamn boat, ran aground on, like, a beach, and it's still sitting there 5 years later because they can't figure out how to get rid of it. And that's the thing, like, that was my answer. Why don't they just cut it into pieces and haul it away? They can't cut that into pieces. How are you going to cut up a whale? You know? A whale doesn't cooperate. Again, it's like you cut the wrong place, and suddenly you're, you know, 10 feet deep in whale guts. That's no good.
That would be bad.
I thought maybe you would take that to a funny place.
It's a waterfall of maggots. There's no funny place. Here's Tim Riley. Baleen's.
Well, Amos Johnson is facing a felony charge.
I'm not plankton. That's really the best, though. I'm sorry.
I was talking about Amos Johnson.
I'm sorry. Who?
Amos Johnson.
Amos Johnson's right about Navin Johnson's being right.
Well, he faces a felony charge after allegedly cutting down 5 telephone poles and selling them for $5 apiece.
I don't understand what he's
saying. What is going to take one?
What?
He cut down 5 telephone poles and sold them for $5 each.
Where?
A Printer, Kentucky.
Who buys telephone poles?
People in Kentucky.
Who
would buy a dead whale? Or New Carissa. These are the dead whales of Kentucky.
These are the questions we ask here. Let's all stop.
Mm-hmm.
He cut down 5 telephone poles.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes, 5.
Thank you. And then he sold them for how much?
$5 a piece.
I'm sorry. To whom?
It doesn't say.
Some guy. How hard can it be to find the guy that bought 5 telephone? Where are you going to put them?
Yard sale?
How did? right next to like some flatware.
Saturday market.
Old doll clothing. How hard can it be to find a guy who bought 5 telephone poles? Okay, all right.
Maybe they sold them to an undercover agent.
All right. No, that's wrong. That's one of those things I just said yes to and then I processed it. It doesn't make any sense. So if you see a guy with 5 television...
No, telephone
poles. You know.
He didn't cut down 5 television.
Okay.
Meanwhile,
Yes?
Batista's wife is dead. Remember who Batista was?
No.
He was the dictator of Cuba.
Oh.
Run out by Fidel Castro.
But that was like 100 years ago.
Yeah. Well, she was only 82, so she must have been a young lady back when he married her.
She must have been like a child bride or something. That was forever ago. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, dead.
And apparently they took as much as $700 million from the country's coffers when they left. She is Marta Fernandez Batista. She was in declining health following hip surgery since 1995. Well, she's been in declining health for 11 years. She's also a major contributor to a hospital in Miami.
All right. Scotty, are these limerick songs? Is that what these are now? These are, okay. Sarah's my computer up. Oh, this is me. I turned off the porn music. Had gone all crazy on me. This is, Scotty, this isn't limerick music.
Is that Scottish porn music?
Scotty.
Why can't he just use the bagpipes alone? That might work.
Well, because that lacks the style and subtlety of this. He says it's his own personal statement.
About limerick? Thank you.
Okay. Here's his other, none of these make any sense, Scotty. These are completely inappropriate for limericks. Wait, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing something here.
A jig.
No, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing TV narration somehow to this, but I can't quite figure out to what. But this is like a this is a municipal promotional film. Houston, city of tomorrow, city of industry. That, you know, that's totally one of those five schools within driving distance. Hunting and fishing. No, wait, and then this is the part where, like, I don't know what this
is. Talk about the landscape, like the home.
Rolling fields of grain for you and your family.
Golf course for your leisure time.
For your next business trip or convention, consider Courtyard by Marriott. You'll be glad you did. Yeah, and then we all freeze frame, looking really white and smiling at the camera.
I picture someone flying off in the air balloon.
Okay. Okay, worst limericks beds ever. David, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Music would be good for the condos at Loch Ness.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, here we go. There once was a page on the hill, chased by a congressman who wanted a thrill. The old man made his move, said, "Young page, let us groove. Bend over and come get your fill."
Oh,
that's disgusting.
Go.
Well done. Well done, sir.
Thank you,
David. All right, there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
Top of the Geek Watch.
How about a Geek Watch?
High speed modem is intolerably slow.
God damn.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to...
just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
God almighty.
In the late 1970s, with his creative instincts and Hollywood power swelling to their greatest levels up to that point, Muppets creator Jim Henson found himself obsessed with the dark, deranged work of English illustrator Brian Freud.
The Dark Crystal.
The result is the 1982 The Dark Crystal, a fantasy flick that debuted as a commercial and critical failure.
Now, are you down with The Dark Crystal?
Yeah. Well, I think, I like The Dark Crystal. I think if around my age, I think you're either really into The Dark Crystal or you were really into Labyrinth.
The thing is, or both, right?
But I think you have to pick one or the other, you know?
The thing about The Dark Crystal is, if you were A, either really forgiving, or B, really young at the time, you really liked it. Because you watch it now, and it just... And I love Jim Henson. I love the Muppets. But you can see what he was trying to go for, and you can see how he wasn't quite able to make it work. Because still, it's like characters being moved around with sticks and fishing lines.
But in Labyrinth, all the characters that he had were so good.
The Creature Shop, I mean, it was amazing. That guy, he's a guy... I don't want to get all of it. Because the whole thing about Jim Henson is it just makes me alternately or simultaneously really sad and really angry. Because... You know, because sad that he's dead, and then angry because he was like sitting around the house, you know, like drowning in his own whatever, in his own goo, because he had pneumonia, and his daughter all day, like, "Go to the hospital." "No, I'll be fine." "No, I'll be fine." And then, you know, "No, go to the hospital." "No, I'm okay." And then the next thing you know, it's not easy being dead. And, you know, and so if he'd just gone to the goddamn hospital, he'd still be here. And the thing that frustrates me about it is he's one of those guys like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, where his imagination outstripped technology, but now technology has caught up to him. And you think about the stuff Jim Henson could be making now, and it makes me feel all... I just feel bad. The whole thing makes me feel melancholy.
Oh, don't feel so bad. No, like...
Thank you. Now, cheer up.
Cheer up. Now, like a woodland creature calling to action, I have no idea what this is. The Dark Crystal is preparing to rise up again, and this time, it has technology on its side, along with one of the hottest action directors in all of geekdom.
Who?
Who? Is?
Well, it's not outlined. I have no idea. You want to know the guy's name?
never tell us. In fact, leave all proper names and places out of all news stories from now on. It'll be sort of a game we play.
Well, he said,
I did
television shows
Danny
like
DeVito.
Dexter's Laboratory, The Powderpuff Girls, Samurai Jack, and Clone Wars, and then I decided to go into features, said highly stylized Russian director, oh my goodness. Gendy Tartakovsky?
Wow, very... Look at that!
Wow.
Boy, that's totally some, that's totally some...
It kind of looks like Brendan Tartikoff.
No, that is... You know what it is? That's totally hitting the bullseye in the dark right there. Well done.
Yeah, I'm done with this one.
He did, Dexter's Laboratory, Powerpuff Girls, Samurai Jack. What happened to Samurai Jack? That show was on and then just went away.
I know.
And so, Yeah, Genndy Tartakovsky, who I believe, now I may be wrong about this, I thought also did the voice of Dexter, but I may be wrong about that. Dexter's Lab, if somebody, what the hell, is anybody here a Dexter's Lab fan or is it just me?
Is that new show that's on Showtime?
No, yes. Now, see, there's a great joke there. If only I could do the Dexter's voice. But first, I will kill you. No, I can't do it. I can't really do the Dexter voice. What? Because I was going to ask what the hell kind of accent it is that Dexter even has. If you watch Dexter's Laboratory, which is a great cartoon, by the way, you know that's the great thing about it is he's the only one in the family with an accent. Mom and Dad are all really white bread and like from Tigard. And the sister, you know, sounds the same. And then he's a whole lot of, "Please get out of my laboratory. I'm working on experiments." You know, and he's got this whole, like, Eastern Bloc accent. That'd be so great if I could do the accent, because then I could do the whole Showtime for the Dexter program as Dexter's Laboratory. All right. Well, anyway, that's part of a Geek Watch.
Now, George Lucas has a message for studios that are cutting their slates and shifting toward big budget tentpoles and franchises.
Tentpole.
You've got it all wrong. The creator of Star Wars that stamped the template for the franchise tentpole film... This is ridiculously written. Says many small firms and web distribution is the future to go. And in case anyone doubts he means it, Lucasfilm is getting out of the movie business. Yes, Lucasfilm is getting out of the movie business.
All right.
We don't want to make movies anymore. Don't try to talk us out of it.
Thank you, Lee.
We're going into television. As far as Lucasfilm is concerned, we moved away from the future feature film thing because it's too expensive and it's too risky.
All right.
And we think the secret to the future is quality.
Plastics.
You really got to have a brand, and you've got to have a site with enough material on it to attract people.
All right. Whatever. As long as you can just stop raping my childhood for a goddamn minute. Let's see here. Do we have a... all right. This is... hello, Brian?
Hello, Rick.
Hi. All right. Do you have a limerick for us, sir?
I do, and it's not my best effort, but we'll give it a shot anyway. It's only tickets for Harvey Korman and...
say only. What kind of attitude is that?
No, I'm kidding. I would kill almost anyone to see those guys. So, but in lieu of that, we'll do a limerick. Are you ready?
You're kind of scary.
Sure. You'll be talking to him. Looking at me?
No, the guy who just said he'd kill people for tickets.
Really? Because you're serious. We've got a list. We know some people you could start with, sir.
Okay, I'll talk to this guy to call me later. Here we go.
Well,
here we go. There once was a very cute page whose presence Tom's member did enrage. The young fellow heeded I am as old Tom said, "I'm in," and now old Foley's left the stage.
I'm confused. Who is Tom?
Oh. God, it would help if I paid attention to the news, wouldn't it? Well, I'm an idiot.
How are you feeling?
Pretty much like an idiot.
Yeah. Why don't you write another one and then give us a call back before the end of the show?
Oh, thanks. Thank you. You're overly kind. I will do that. And I'll disguise my voice.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is the call breaking up?
Yeah, I can't hear you, sir.
Seriously?
No, I can't.
No,
we're losing you.
God.
Okay.
So mean.
Well, no, this is not my fault. Who's Tom? Who is he even talking about? Tom Foley. Is he talking about Tom? Tom Foley dead, isn't he?
He got flustered.
Isn't Tom Foley dead, Tim?
I'm not going to go on a limb on this one.
All right.
My deaths have all been wrong lately.
All right. Well, he's politically dead anyway. That's all that matters. All right. It's 2-1 more with Tim Riley. Well. Who can put it better than that, ladies and gentlemen? I guess we have time for coming. I guess it's only 49 here. All right.
The first official sequel to Peter Pan, entitled Peter Pan in Scarlet.
There ought to be a Greek restaurant called Peter Pan.
Yeah. In Britain and 30 other countries, it hit the bookstores. 100 years after Scottish author J.M. Barrie created the character, more than 500,000 copies of the work, published by Geraldine McLaren, have been published for the launch in English, but also in languages including Basque, Chinese, French, Hebrew, and Polish.
I have never read Peter Pan, ever.
I haven't either.
Really? Have you, sir?
I don't think so.
I think it's one of those children's books that it's so... Here's the thing about Peter Pan is it's just so well ensconced in the pop culture that you don't need to read it because you know the whole deal, right? And then you know the whole... And we've all seen the play or whatever. And why is Peter Pan always played by a woman? Why is that?
Because women are more agile.
That's... Okay, that's just a dumb answer.
Why is that a dumb answer? That's a dumb question.
It's not a dumb question.
It's not a dumb question. Because
I go all day with you. That's like saying, from now on, I decree that Ichabod Crane must be played by a woman.
I'm sorry, does Peter Pan not look like a little flying pixie-haired woman?
You don't know men who look pixie-like? Look at me in the eye and tell me you don't.
I
know you do.
That's not what I'm saying.
You don't know
I'm not putting words out. I'm not saying I don't know any men who are pixie-like.
And I know that nobody who works on Broadway or in the stage or in the theater could find any men who are pixie-like. God knows that'd be hard.
Maybe women are just better at playing the head parts in those kind of roles.
Understand that I'm not trying to pick a fight about this.
Why is it like Polly Pan? If it's a woman.
Polly Pan. I feel like we're wading into some big discussion that really doesn't need to be had. I was just asking why it was. I just didn't know. It seems
that's like, really why I think.
And knowing is half the battle. Okay.
Whatever, I don't know.
I don't know either. I've quit caring. Now. Okay.
It's probably easier to find, you know, people who fit the physical role of Peter Pan out of the group of women that are doing ballet instead of men.
I'm just saying it seems like one of those things that now you have to do. Like now you have to cast a woman as Peter Pan. And the fact that it's not, it doesn't seem, I'm not this type of person that really cares about this kind of thing all the time. No, I'm just saying,
You want to be Peter Pan?
You know, this is why we don't have a consultant, by the way. Because they know that every consultant meeting would just be hours of me arguing back and forth with the consultant about why I care about Peter Pan's gender.
No, we do what the consultant says when he's in the building, and then he's flying away 3,000 miles away the next day, so he doesn't go back to do whatever he wants. If we had a consultant.
Which we don't. Here's Tim Riley.
On TV tonight, because I know you care, the 2006 Miss America pageant from Las Vegas. The Office is on tonight, but nobody talks about that.
Man, nobody's watching it. I mean, I'm watching it. Well, see, we're watching it because we're smart. We're watching it, and I'll guarantee you right there, I'll guarantee you that the people in the audience are watching it. Because if you could take, like, the people in America, the great unwashed, what they watch.
Betty and Barney six-pack.
Is that what you say, Betty and Barney six-pack? Every region has got their own, because it was Joe six-pack, of course, when I grew up, and then I moved to Utah, and in Utah, it's not Joe six-pack. In Utah, it's Johnny Lunch Bucket. They say Johnny Lunch Bucket.
They wouldn't have a six-pack.
They don't. I didn't spot that. When I moved to Utah, colloquialisms and regionalisms fascinate me. And so when I moved to Utah, I was like, Johnny Lunch Bucket, and it took me forever to realize it's because there's no six-pack in the Utah culture.
Unless it's hidden in the lunch bucket underneath something.
Underneath some ham, perhaps. Or a baguette. Anyway, I'm saying if you were to... We are not krill. If you were to take what our audience views on a given night and put it next to what the American... Like, do you remember this story that came out a couple years ago? USA Today did this story that all the talk show hosts talked about a few years ago back, where they put the top 10 most watched shows in white households next to the top 10 most watched TV programs every week in black households. And there was this much hubbub made of the fact that there was like no overlap. Like the only overlap, it was like the Academy Awards or something. But when it came to sitcoms and dramas, like two different things. And so I would bet, though, that we would have the same thing if we were to compare this audience with the American public as a whole, because nobody watches The Office. And when I say nobody, I mean nobody in the flyover state. Sarah watches it, you watch it, I watch it, a lot of people in the audience, because I've been won over by it. At first, I thought it was okay. At first, all I could say was, well, it's not bad. It kind of holds its own. But, you know, The Office has really come into its own. It's a really a funny show. Lycus was talking about this the other day. But, you know, it just gets no ratings. Can I just read this, by the way? Just like, it's like now, since we're talking about this, I might as well just read this email that's going to depress us all.
If it's another cancellation email, I don't want...
It's not a cancellation. I just made this observation. You'll care about part of this, Sarah.
I am ready to be depressed.
You won't care about part of this, but you'll care about... I mean, you'll care about part of it because you appreciate quality even if you don't necessarily watch it. I had emailed Peter Carlin, and I said, hey, good call on Friday Night Lights. I'm not really a sports fan, but I was blown away by the show. It's great. And then I wrote, sort of jokingly, too bad it'll get canceled after a season. Ha, ha, ha. You know, Rick Emerson. Peter Carlin emails back, if it even makes a season, you mean. But we'll see. Blah, 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 blah. P.S. I fear Studio 60 is losing its grip. And I haven't asked him what he means by that. I'm assuming he doesn't mean quality-wise.
No.
I'm assuming he just means what we were talking about yesterday, which is that every episode of, I mean, they've only three episodes in, but that every episode of Studio 60 has attracted fewer viewers than the one before it. They're down almost 5 million viewers from the premiere.
It's because the script is getting smarter every week.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And Aaron Sorkin, God love him, has a higher opinion of most people than I think is warranted. And he had that line in Studio 60, which is a line that I have heard himself, I have heard he himself say out loud, which is, Sorkin has this famous quote where he said, I believe the people who watch TV shows are at least as smart as the people who write them. Not true. Not true for the vast majority of people. And that's proof of Studio 60. The smarter something is, the more quickly it's going to get canceled. So, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? So The Office is on the night. Watch it. Won't help. Won't make any difference. But, you know, watch it if it makes you feel better.
And at the same time, you want to TiVo these classic Dick Cavett shows because he has Betty Davis on tonight.
Really? Who is already probably 150.
Yeah.
So Betty Davis, I would still have sex with Betty Davis.
But you can't. She's dead.
She's not dead. Oh,
she's
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Betty White.
Oh, so was I.
How weird that we were both thinking of Betty White.
Yeah.
I'd still have sex with Betty Davis, though. Screw it. What are you going to do?
Arrest you.
Zing. Well, I just saw this really great obituary photo on a microfiche. And I saw this hot photo in a history book. Thought she'd be good for one more go-around. Why were we both thinking of Betty White?
I don't know.
Who I would also still have sex with. Betty Davis.
What is with you and old ladies?
What do you mean, what's with me and old ladies?
I don't know. Why are you sitting here proclaiming all these elderly women that you'd have sex with?
Wait, who am I to be ageist? Who are you to dictate at what age?
One of them's dead.
So it's not really the age part you have a problem with, though.
Oh, and viewers only alive.
Let's clarify. We had a Peter Pan call, but it's gone away. Scotty's typing. Scotty's, to answer your question, why are you always talking about old dead women you'd have sex with? Scotty typed on the screen, to build cum, Sarah. Bam! Scotty, you are one of us now. Well done.
All right. And it's working.
We should send this to the consultant just to hear his head explode. We really should. We should. That's what we should do as a great bit. We should find a consultant. I will pose as... I'll just not tell him that I'm the host. And I'll just pose as just a Pete and be like, I have a midday show, and perhaps we could be using your services as a consultant. Perhaps if I could... Could you give us a sample a consultation? I will send you a typical, recent, unscoped midday show. And then we'll hear... We totally just have a show where we just talk about guys digging up corpses and avalanches of maggots. And send it out to the consultants. Go, your thoughts and input are appreciated.
Will this make a good country morning show?
Can that be syndicated on your bright AC? Oh, good times, kids. Good times.
We got a break.
We're going to break now. Come back, more Tim.
Another hour to go.
More Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen. You know
Tim
we're
gonna, Riley all the time.
You know we're going to do
how did
next
this
hour? We have Jim Roop. We have Jim Roop. We're talking about some made-up news. We thought we had Jen Lane. We are sans Jen Lane. We are going to do, without fail, Scotty, make me do this now. We're going to do limericks, and we're going to do the top five. We're going to do the top five, and I'll lick any SOB that says otherwise. There you go. 503-733-2970. No, not, you know, like punching. Hello. We're back after this.